Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loan subject to approval in available locations.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Tuesday, the 15th of June, 2021. On the podcast today, Craig Martin, chairman of Dunham Capital, the fund manager of Vietnam Holding, explains why they were the top performing investment trust in May. Also, Glenn Goodman, former ITV news business correspondent and now the author of The Crypto Trader, argues the case for traders and talks about Bitcoin, Ethereum, Cardano and Coty. Plus, as always, I have two lists for you, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours and the top five most read RNSs. You can check out both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk, where you can also see lots of other company news, actually, articles, content, videos. There's one there with Paul Hill, Q&A with Mikkel Mersch, Brick Holdings CEO Frank Hanna. There's an article there on Altona Rare Earths. There's one there on Sigma Rock. What else is there? East Inco, article there. And of course, COVID-19 index. Let's check it out. Biggest rise of the day, Hemogenix Pharmaceuticals, up 14%, 2.4. Biggest fall of today is Omega Diagnostics, down 8.6% to 63.5. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Craig Martin, chairman of Dunham Capital, fund manager of Vietnam Holding, that's VNH ticker. Craig, thanks for joining me.
It's a pleasure, Justin.
Yeah, and you've just announced your monthly investor report. We'll talk about that in a bit. Before we do, Craig, people listening right now who are maybe not familiar with Vietnam Holding, could you explain what it's all about, please?
Sure. Well, Vietnam Holding is a closed-end fund. It's listed on the main board of the London Stock Exchange under the ticker VNH, and it owns a portfolio of Vietnamese equities. It's a concentrated portfolio of great growth opportunities in the dynamic market of Vietnam.
Excellent stuff. Okay. So what's happened? We're speaking on a monthly basis. So what's happened since we last spoke then, Craig?
Justin, since we last spoke, Vietnam became the best performing stock market globally, and Vietnam Holding became the best performing UK investment trust. So that was a very nice way to celebrate Dynam Capital's third anniversary. And also we were active. We held a webinar recently on Vietnam's digital transformation.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned the digital transformation in your May fact sheet, which was published obviously yesterday. So explain, what is that all about then, Craig?
Well, look, for many years, Vietnam's been a big exporter of stuff, a big exporter of goods from commodities in the early 1990s, then semi-finished goods, and more recently, electronics and high tech, both hardware and software services. So on one dimension, digitalization is about reorienting towards a modern and an industrial economy. And in fact, Vietnam exports more high-tech goods than most other emerging markets. But more importantly, perhaps, is the domestic economy and the digitalization of the domestic economy. Our largest investment, which is about 11% of the fund, is a company called FPT, which has grown in value from, $300 million to $3 billion since I first invested in it as a private company 15 years ago. And it's a big exporter of IT services, but also provides domestic IT services to companies and organizations. Actually, today it happens to be upgrading the stock market in Vietnam. It's got ambitions to be a leading cloud computing company and a provider of broadband and other such digital services. So Vietnam's got about 70% internet penetration, which makes it probably one of the highest in Southeast Asia. And the broadband's relatively inexpensive. It's probably about £5 a month. And FPT and these other digital players are therefore enabling a boom in the e-commerce sector in Vietnam. And by 2025, that digital economy could be worth $52 billion, which is four times what it was a few years ago. We also, in our webinar, we looked at how, you know, Vietnam has high mobile penetration. There are more phones than people. And the majority of those are smartphones. So the younger crowd are opening broker accounts and stepping into the Vietnam stock market. And more than 3 million trading accounts, which I guess is probably more than the UK. And the Vietnam stock market is primarily a domestic story with well-known local listed names. So it's encouraging a domestic retail digital app-enabled growth to $1.4 billion a day, which is three times the level of perhaps 2 years ago. And as a result, Vietnam's now the second most liquid stock market in Southeast Asia. And the banks, they're also latching on to this digital technology, way to build their own networks. Let's not forget, Vietnam's still largely unbanked. Only 40% of the adult population have bank accounts. Mm-hmm. And the government wants that to get to at least 70% within the next few years. So it's encouraging cashless payment systems and e-wallets and the like. So the banking system is dynamic and becoming increasingly digital as well.
Yeah, well, that explains probably the next question I was going to ask. Your banking sector, you know, is a key part of your portfolio, more than 30%, I see from the fact sheet. So that explains it, I suppose, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, look, actually, about 33% of our portfolio is in banks. Now, it hasn't always been like that. 18 months ago, it was less than 10%. But we did a very deep dive into the sector and uncovered several good names that we started building larger positions in. And we've got a very talented research manager who knows the banks inside out, and she helped us select some really great names. And our banks have been going gangbusters this year and have certainly contributed to, you know, the strong performance this year and the 14% increase in the net asset value in May. So banks have maintained and they've grown their net interest margins. They've positioned themselves for better credit growth, sorted out some of the historical non-performing loans, and also innovated new products, both those of their own design, and then partnering others to distribute products, such as insurance company products, through their network and their infrastructure. So the banking and the resulting portfolio construction have actually driven great outperformance for the fund.
Yeah, absolutely. And it looks like the share price looks very good at the moment. Rising, going to that top right of the screen. Excellent performance. Okay, Craig, well, listen, if anyone's listening right now, likes the sound of what you're doing there, the exposure you have, but are not yet following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Fox Markets and add Vietnam Holding to their watch list, please.
Oh, great. Firstly, VNH was the top-performing investment trust in May. Secondly, the portfolio company earnings are growing more than 40% this year, probably close to 50%, at a modest valuation of 11 times earnings. And lastly, the shares in the fund can be bought at a 20% discount to its net asset value through a broker on the London Stock Exchange. So they're the top three reasons to follow and look at the fund.
Excellent stuff. Craig, congratulations on your performance in May, and long may it continue, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Let's hope so. Appreciate that. Thanks ever so much.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Glenn Goodman, the author of the Crypto Brackets Dirty Trader book, of course. And you can get that book still for sale. Is it selling well now? Or is it, now that Bitcoin's rolled over a bit, is it correlated, of course? You know.
It's still selling well. Thanks. For inviting me on the podcast, Justin.
I'm on a weekly basis.
I'm trying to do this now because you said I never know how to say hello or goodbye properly.
Say thanks for inviting me on the podcast. It's just a recurring invitation on the diary that happens every week.
This
is not the BBC, Glenn, where you made that hilarious joke last week about we have special skills and, you know, like the Liam Neeson film where I will track you down and I will find you and I will kill you.
Yeah.
I didn't say the I will kill you bit. Because
you should have gone that. It's probably a bit too far.
You might not have liked that. But yeah, the idea was we were talking about the story which we touched on last week.
The FBI!
Yeah,
it's got your crypto wallet. Hey, listen, let me say one thing.
Just to remind people quickly, the ransom. It was a ransom of Colonial Pipeline, the biggest or one of the biggest oil pipeline companies in the United States. They had been hacked by hackers who had effectively shut down a lot of the oil supply to the Eastern Seaboard temporarily and really messed up their systems in America. So, it was a major problem. And they were saying, right, we'll restore your systems if you give us loads of Bitcoin, millions of dollars worth of Bitcoin. So the company panicked and transferred the Bitcoin.
Why did they do that?
Well, because they basically, it was damage limitation because they were terrified that so far the hackers had only managed to affect their administrative systems. They hadn't actually closed down the pipeline.
I know, but the thing is, you've given in ransom, right?
Supply.
Yeah, but what's happened now, though?
If they didn't give them the ransom, there was a possibility that the whole pipeline would shut down and there would be no oil for
New York, which would
be appalling. Obviously.
That's fine. No, it's fine. It's fine. No one needs oil. How much oil do you eat in a day? No, but listen, let me say one thing. So what's happening now? These ransom people, you know, the hijackers, they realise now it works, actually. The last bit, we need to tweak the last bit because the FBI got a private key.
Yes,
obviously, our key wasn't too private.
The FBI seized most of the money, so it didn't work. So it's a lesson that it doesn't work.
Yeah, no, it does work.
It doesn't because they got the money back.
No, the last bit of that thing, though, they got away with the money. That's the thing. The biggest hurdle is getting the money, let's be honest. Now, where they messed up was who gave it to the... Because the FBI created this messaging app, didn't they, that the Wastoms are using, all the mafia guys were using and these criminals were using. So they're obviously a bit stupid.
I think that was a separate thing. We don't know if that messaging app that hooked a lot of criminals, the FBI set up a fake messaging app and then were able to monitor.
Yeah, what happened is the FBI...
don't think, as far as we know,
they did. That's the way it worked. That's the way it worked. The FBI said, hey, this is Don Ravioli. I need the private key for the Bitcoin. And then, another a minion in the mafia thing said, okay, Don, here we go, pass it over. It's a long figure, mind. So he passed it over and said, there it is. And the FBI, with the FBI, I now can download Bitcoin. And that's the way it works.
That may be very close to what happened. Yeah. We know there are only two real possibilities.
And so the guy there is going, I shouldn't have given him a private key. It's called a private key for certain reasons because it's private. I shared it publicly, not privately. Oh, gosh.
Yeah. All right, I need to say no more of that because that's clearly what happened.
That summed it up, and that's. But when you're on the BBC, there obviously that's pre-recorded, isn't it? That bit you did it didn't go live, did it?
No, that was live, yeah.
They trust you to go live, do they?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Live as you like, mate. Well, I used to be a TV reporter, remember? I've had more lives than you've had hot dinners, mate.
Yeah, but you could have gone rogue. That's why you're no longer on the ITV. This guy went rogue. He started doing really odd analogies about Liam Neeson killing people. Every business report, he got back to that Liam Neeson. I got very special skills and I will track you down and kill you. I said, Clay, could you stop doing that at the end of each bulletin? I said, okay, sorry, I quite like it as well. I quite like that sort of character. But talking about the Bitcoin, it's tempting to get above 40, isn't it? But it's failed. Failed twice, I think. It's struggling. A resistance of 40.
But it looks like it still looks kind of bullish to me. But not necessarily bullish. What it looks like is it's hit against a resistance level at 41,000 and it's struggling to get through there. But of course, the more times it tests that level, the more chance it has of eventually breaking through. That's how these things usually work. So by the time this podcast goes out, it might have already broken through 41,000.
You say that by the time this podcast goes out.
Well, you're asking me about the price, this minute, basically. But this is a short-term thing we're talking about here.
Yeah, but you talk about it, like the podcast goes a week on Thursday or something, next couple of hours. But,
the next couple of hours, it might have broken through.
Well, oddly, I've drawn a channel on the RSI here, right? Like I said, a series of higher lows in the RSI. That's the relative strength, the momentum, the price action. Yeah. And literally, it's just broken above 51, 52, which is a good sign, but it's rolled over again. So It's good. I reckon. Well, we've seen the bottom here.
Let me qualify that.
But I do see it coming back in that trend line. I think it'll go sideways for a while, and it could go down to 30,000 again. So I'm not saying, you know, I'm not saying it's going to go up from here. I'm saying, and people don't think that, are they? There was three options, of course: up, down, or sideways. And it can travel in a range. And in fact, something you said to me stuck out a little bit. If Bitcoin becomes boring and travels in a range for a while, that's a problem, really, because then people start losing interest. And then, when people have lost interest, and Bitcoin's not on anyone's radar, it starts to rise then, because all the sellers are out, you know? And
it's the same with stocks, isn't it? Yeah. You know, that's why they often form bases for years at a time. You know, a stock will have a massive boom, and then it will fall for a couple of years, and then it will go sideways for sometimes 3 or 4 years, even more, until nobody's interested in it anymore. And then that sets the stage for a kind of like a brand new rally that starts with sort of fresh buyers, and it doesn't have all those legacy worries about it and all the narratives that have gone before. It's like a bit of a clean slate when something goes sideways for a while. So Bitcoin never goes sideways for years like some stocks do, but even a few months of going sideways would be enough in this fast-moving world to significantly change the narrative. So that could do the trick. But anyway,
talk about changing narrative. Let me say one thing.
Yeah.
I'm going to be probably a bit more bullish now because I bought some crypto.
Right, okay.
No, the reason is, this is why I summarize this, right? I'm not even looking, it's not even enough to even take, and that's a good start. It's not even enough to actually pay attention to too much, you know? Because I'm thinking, I've got a little bit of spare cash. I've got most of my cash in the ISA, most of my money's in the ISA, and I got another stockbroker account as well, which is not non-ISA. But I thought, rather than just keeping a bit of cash in my bank account, which is, you know, it's not doing anything there, I thought, I'm not desperate for that. I don't want it back. I don't need to spend it on bills. I've got money for bills set aside. It's fine. So, and then, do you know what? I'm going to sort of hold it in just three cryptos. And that's what I'm going to do. And see if I get a better return on that than I would do in a bank account. And so what I've bought into is Cardano, ADA,
yeah.
Ethereum, and also a bit of Bitcoin. Because you never know. You know, it can be a store of store of value. But I think longevity there may be in Ethereum, isn't it? And Cardano, you know? So I'm going to hold that. I've got a lot in there, but I think it's a big sell. It's seen a bit of support to it. It may go lower, but I'm happy for that because I'm not having that much in. If I'd put the house on it, I'd be, you know, in and out like a maniac maybe, but I'll just let it there. I'm prepared to get bored with it and let it go sideways for ages.
Well, I mean, you know, if you want to sort of have the maximum possible odds of picking a long-term winner, then you've probably done that correctly. Those three that you've chosen are, I mean, I can't think of any other cryptocurrencies that I would say have better chance to be a long-term winner than those three that you've just mentioned: Bitcoin, Ethereum, Cardano. All of them have enormous potential. Cardano is an outsider. It's great in theory, really great, as in probably theory, better than Ethereum.
Yeah,
in
exactly. But, well, you know what? I was listening to that podcast.
So far, there isn't much development on Cardano so far, but I expect there will be in the future.
Yeah, but they're going for, and I listened to a podcast on this, and it was quite long, when I was walking my dog for an hour, and this guy went above my head on several stations, but he was talking about Ethereum and Cardano, and he was saying that Ethereum's gone for really, you know, practice or actually getting real, you know, sort of value there, starting off and developing things. Whereas Cardano's gone down the peer-reviewed side a bit and getting sort of that kind of, and so I quite like that. But I mean, so they're saying, and this guy was obviously more so deeply researched. This guy did an hour-long podcast on it, but he was saying longevity. He said, well, he holds both, but he thinks in the long term Cardano may be the one, but he's not going to put all his eggs in one basket because he's going through Ethereum as well, because that's also getting... So, yeah, I know you're right. I mean, I like both, and but I have to look into it a bit more. I didn't really know. It's fine. But, I like both. So I'm going to hold.
You like. Price-wise...
One thing, it's no denying, is there, the technology, decentralized DeFi and all this stuff, it's going to be around. You know, it's going to be around forever. The fact that governments
are
now going...
Well, unless it gets regulated out of existence. Yeah, that's the only possibility that could scupper things. But yeah, at the moment, it's already got tens of billions of dollars of capital invested in it, as in people lending and borrowing tens of billions of dollars on DeFi. You know, it works. So it doesn't just work in theory. It works in practice as well as a borrowing lending mechanism. And, you know, there are lots of other banking industry abilities that it's picking up as it goes along. As I say, the only question is what happens when the regulators get involved. Will they mess it up? Will they take away its edge? To some degree, they probably will, but it's still a lovely piece of technology that isn't based on those kind of lumbering, clunky legacy systems. So in some ways, it will still have advantages, even if it's regulated, as long as it's not too regulated. I don't know. These are the longer term fears, basically.
Well, you mean the government...
You know, that's why it's not a one-way bet. That's why no crypto is a one-way bet. And it really annoys me when people on Twitter, mainly on Twitter, but also on, you know, YouTube videos and so on, you know, where they go, it's definitely going to the moon and all the rest of it. It's like, there is no definitely in a world where Elizabeth Warren, you see, this is the thing, those kind of people, they don't listen to like the Senate Banking Committee like I did last week. I sat through Elizabeth Warren droning on for ages and ages about cryptocurrency and Bitcoin. She hates it. I mean, she's totally against it.
And yeah, but mainly on the environmental front, isn't it?
No, not just on the environmental front, on the possibility of terrorism, on all kinds of different fronts. You know, they just think she thinks that the cons massively outweigh the pros. And luckily, everything's not up to her. She's not the president, so she can't necessarily decide, right, we're going to ban it. But she is the chairman of the banking committee that discussed it last week. And even though lots of the other members of the committee, other senators, were more positive about cryptocurrency, she votes very much was not. And it does make you wonder about what kind of regulations she might try and force onto it in the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So not a one-way bet. That's why
is, though, it can be... The odd thing is, with any new technology, first of all, or any, in fact, a business, a startup, a disruptor, you don't know if it's got, you know, commercial application for a while. But sometimes, if you're early enough, and, you know, it's funny, on my Sharepickers Investment Club there, someone said they invested in Bitcoin when I started doing videos on it, and that was at 8,000 or 9,000. I got out to, like, 10,000 because I got bored. And then they sold, when I said to you on the podcast, the fact that my dad's asking about Bitcoin... It's probably the time to get out. And they got out at 53,000. So they did from 9,000 to 53,000. Taking some podcast advice here. And I didn't take my own advice, which is always the thing. It's always good, easy to set up rules. Sticking to them is the hardest thing, you know? And
that's where technical trading comes in so handy, you see, because like you...
No, but you can break that rule. So,
no, because when I was down at 10,000, like you, I had all kinds of preconceptions about what may or may not happen to the sector. But ultimately, when I saw the breakout happen around about 10,000, I bought because that was the big breakout I'd been looking for. That was the technical level. I put all my biases to one side and just followed the rules like I talk about in the book. So I bought then, and I sold round about where that lady sold. Yeah, round about there.
Oh yeah. Thing is, though, you saved the technical stuff, but
I should say I was in and out a couple of times on the way. I didn't just purely run all the way up. I got out and in a couple of times along the way, but I didn't lose money through doing that. It was just kind of a bit of a waste of time.
The reason why we have to set rules is the reason why we break them as well. So we set them because our emotions get carried away and we can trade any... Now, my area of competence isn't crypto. It never will be. It'll always be stocks. So, you know, I put a lot more research into stocks and I have sort of filter systems and all that stuff that I go through. And even then, I know the fact is, when I've previously not done well in stocks, they've gone sideways or gone down, I haven't stuck to my rules. I've emotionally got involved. And thought, this is going to go higher. This is going to, you know, or for some reason, I'm convinced of myself. Now, I said, you've got to have rules, but even then, you can break them. That rule you said on the... You know, on the we talked about it, you know, and it's always again moving averages crossing over. You can stick to that and do well, you know, but why don't we then? Because we, you know, because that's a good rule to stick to.
Well, because people have asked me that. They've said, why don't you just follow the moving average system that you put in your book? You know, because I just put in a standard moving average crossover system in my book as an example to show people. And also, you know, if they want to use it, they can use it. So why don't I use it, they say. And I say, well, I used to use moving average crossover systems for stocks and that kind of thing. But a really good trader, and I'm not saying I am one, but a really good trader can massively outperform a moving average crossover system. And really good traders do massively outperform it through discretionary means, through trading, using rules that are kind of based on trend following rules like moving average crossovers, but are kind of adapted so that you know, basically tweaked versions using the human brain. And so I trade in a discretionary fashion, and most of the time I do beat moving average crossover systems. But you know, it also gives me an incentive to become a better and better trader, to improve my craft, because I know the better I get, the more profit I'm going to make, and the more I'll beat a moving average crossover system. Basically, what I'm trying to say is, if you just follow a moving average crossover system where you just buy at certain points and sell at certain points, and it's all really mechanical, it's kind of, it could get a bit boring.
Yeah, but that's trading. Like. That's why I don't like trading.
I know.
Trading
but is trading is my life, and I don't want it to be that boring.
We'll do some fundamental research on companies then, because companies can be interesting. Whereas trading, it's very soulless, I find. It's like nothing, you know. I understand if you research a cryptocurrency and you like the business behind it and what it stands for, what it's doing, invest in it. If you think it's a good level where it is now,
I disagree, because I've done tons of fundamental research on all these
pointless. Why?
You know,
why?
I know tons about all.
Why?
Of them. Because it's important background
knowledge. No, it's not.
And,
you're a trader on technicals.
No.
All that's baked in. That's what all traders say. That's all that's baked into the price on the chart. You don't need to read anything. You can be lazy. You can be lazy, sit in your pants all day and trade, just using moving averages and price action, because it's all baked in the chart.
Yeah, it is baked in the chart, but it's also important to distinguish between something that's, say, a pure Ponzi scheme and something that has long-term potential. Because even though the charts may look the same, you know that if you've done the fundamental research, that the future of the charts, the bit that's not written yet, may be massively influenced by those fundamentals, as in the one that has no fundamentals may eventually go down to zero, whereas the one that's got fantastic fundamentals has got a damn good chance of just going higher and higher in the long term. So that's important to know.
The more I've looked at charts, let me tell you now, even 10 years ago, I used to print them out, and more than 10 years ago, I used to print out charts all the time. The more I look at charts, right, when it comes to investing in stocks, and I'm talking businesses, not share prices, businesses, the less point they have. I think the more pointless they are. And I've made lots of money. I've seen sort of bearish chart move setups all the time. I've just held good businesses that are improving and done very well. Excellently. And there's no point looking at charts if you're an investor. No point whatsoever. In fact, you should read a book at the moment I'm reading. I read half of it before, but I'm starting to read it again. In fact, I'm listening to it while I'm walking the dog. It's called 100 Baggers, and these are companies that have done 100 bags.
Yeah, you've mentioned
and
that.
You can look at charts all day long, and many of these companies, and Netflix is in there, for example. One day it fell by 40%, and there was a period of 8 months where it fell by 80%. Never mind, it's done 100 bags. Now, if you look at charts only, but if you look back at the time...
Yeah, but you're saying don't look at charts at all.
No.
Be more wrong.
I could be more wrong. No. You look at charts on crypto, of course, because there's no fundamental business there.
Stocks, if you're not looking at the chart and you're only looking at the fundamentals, you will
You just said that you will probably lose most of your money. Absolute nonsense.
Anybody would if they didn't look at charts.
I know good investors...
They didn't look at where the price is.
Let me finish. I know very good investors who are literally towards eight figures portfolios, right? I mean, 10 million plus, who'd never look at charts. Never. Because they're all about the business. And the business, and share prices go up and down. That's the nature of the stock market. So if you're going to sell out and wee your pants every time the share price goes down, you will never make mammoth returns, ever. So that's the difference between investing and trading. Trading, like, oh, it's going to roll over, it's head and shoulders. Head and shoulders pattern. Jump out, everyone. Oh! Now, with crypto, you have to do that because there's no business there.
If you're talking about venture capital firms...
Individuals.
Fair enough, because they're close to the business. They know the CEOs personally. They get to understand what they're investing in. But if you're investing blind because you're a small investor, somebody who buys AIM shares,
you are investing blind if you do that. No!
All you have to go on is the quarterly statements or half-yearly statements from the company themselves, who obviously put the best possible gloss that that they can on their stuff and give future projections that may or may not be realistic. So if you rely on that stuff, if you're not looking at the chart as well and looking at, for clues as to where the price is going, then you could be in very serious trouble.
Clues. Oh, let's find the clues. Let's find the clues. Are you not clues?
Listen, everybody listening to this, including you, right, has been in this situation numerous times where they have studied the fundamentals of a company. They've studied them in as much depth as possible. They're absolutely certain that the price is going to go
up. We had this argument last week. You're wrong.
They buy the thing, and then the price goes down, and then it goes down some more, and then it goes down some more. And then it goes down some more. And then 6 months later, the company brings out a profit warning. And then you go, ah, so that's why the price was falling, because the insiders
Glenn,
were selling in
advance. Glenn, hang on a second. Stop, stop.
Too late by then.
Glenn,
you've
stop.
Lost half your money, mate.
Glenn, stop. Glenn, stop. Stop. We had this argument last week. The best example you come with is you meeting the fund manager in a party 10 years ago. That, Your Honour, I rest my case. Let me say one thing, right? I've multiplied my...
Everyone's been in that position. You're lying if you say you've not been in that position because you have been.
Listen a second.
Many times.
And
you know it.
Listen. As you know, experience you can't buy. It takes a long time to build up experience in the market. And of course, mistakes have been made by everyone who starts investing. But you tend to get better and better. Your losses get less and less. And that's not only looking at charts, it's sort of fundamental looking at business inside out, because it's the business that drives the share price, not the other way around. Okay?
Of course. You've got to look at both.
Hang on a second. No, I do look at both. But like I say, I look at what to invest into with fundamentals. And then maybe timing-wise, I always look at the chart. That's the end filter on my 9 filter system. Look at the chart, make sure the business is right, fits all these filters, then look at the chart. And then if it's risen and the RSI is ridiculous and it's done high double-digit percentage gains in the last week or so, leave it alone, let it cool off. But I've multiplied my portfolio in the last 11 years now by over 80 times, right, from where it started off. And this is largely down to buying, you know, decent businesses now that are improving. And yes, the share price has rolled over many times. There's been, golden crossovers, there have been head and shoulders, all that. Ignore that. The business is improving. They're going to be generating more cash in 12 months' time than they are now. It's just improving. So don't worry about it. That's the nature. Volatility is the nature of the market.
No, I'm not talking about volatility. I'm talking about long-term downtrends. Volatility is fine. You're right. As a long-term investor, you shouldn't be looking at sort of, you know, five-day moving averages or whatever. You shouldn't be looking at little head and shoulders. As a long-term investor, the only chart patterns that actually matter are the ones that develop over months or even years at a time. So you're not getting in and out often. The idea is to stay in for a very long time, as you know that I have done with many shares in the past. I've used Next as an example a lot in the past because that's one that I held on to for donkey's years. And that's partly because of the fundamentals, but also partly because the chart wasn't doing anything absolutely horrific. Of course, it had its ups and downs, but as a long-term trend follower, I was staying in even during all those ups and downs. It would have taken a pretty major down for me to decide that Next was in deep trouble and I was getting out. And eventually that did happen many years down the line. And it turned out to be a good decision because, of course, the price, I think, halved after I sold it. But, you know, the point being that a long-term trend following is not that different from a Warren Buffett in terms of the actual way that they trade. It's about staying in for the long term in a good, ongoing concern.
Isn't this right? And anyone, right, who's literally achieved 100 bagger has not been bothered with the chart. They bought right and held on. That's it.
Absolute nonsense.
You read the book. People don't look at the chart. There's no mention of charts in there.
Yeah, I could read them, but I'm sure that sentence doesn't make it false. Hang on.
These are documented. There's examples in the book, plenty of them. Documented.
Really? And have any
hang on, let me finish. Let me finish. Let me finish. Let me finish a second.
Yeah, go on.
There's documented examples in the book, right, of people doing 100 baggers. Some of them is because they forgot they owned the stock, right? So, literally, of course, it's volatility that scares a lot of people out, right? And even they've given lots of examples of trading highs and lows and all that stuff, and the compound interest, returns you've got is better over... And they said but the average time for 100 bagger, let's be honest, it's not realistic in most people's cases, but the average time for 100 bagger is 25 years, right? Now, if you'd held on for 25 years, you'd have 100 bagger. If you'd have 20 years, You only got a 40 bagger because that's the combine interest. Okay. Now,
Hang on a second. Yes. Find that none of them have become 100 baggers because you've been unlucky.
Glenn, let me finish.
Oh, I'm old now.
Let me finish.
I haven't got time to do it again.
There's plenty of examples in the book of that with this guy.
No, because there are little diamonds to be found anywhere in the world. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, listen, a ridiculous thing to say. You will never find them. Because it's too consumed with a chart.
I found some in the past, but by luck more than anything else. 100
bagger.
You never know something's going to become a 100 bagger in advance.
Tell me 100 bagger you've held and found.
What have I held? Oh, God, off the top of my head. I don't know. I have to.
You've never had an 100 bagger, you fibber. Tell the truth. I'm starting to question everything you've said.
Now, 100 baggers. I've had cryptos that are 100 baggers, definitely, even in the last 6 months.
I'm talking about a company, right, that you've held has become 100 bagger. Tell me about it.
Well, I've had cryptos that I don't know. How many companies are 100 baggers?
Exactly.
If you read the book, they'll tell you.
They'll tell you exactly. Stock market volatility, right, is the price you pay for better gains. Let me finish this a second, right? Stock market volatility is the price you pay for better gains. You can put your money elsewhere if you want, but you know the price can manifest itself in a paper loss, which takes an emotional toll. If you're prepared to accept this price, you'll achieve better gains, right? And in fact, in the book, they talk about volatility.
How many 100 baggers did this person actually
Hang on a second. Let me just finish. Can I finish, please? Right, in the book, he talks about volatility being a fee you pay. And it got me thinking about this, and I thought of, of course, you pay the volatility, that's the price you pay. But if a good company's improving, fundamentally, there's only one way it will go, you know? Now, I know this guy did this book because he'd read a book about 10 baggers, and he saw this guy doing a speech, and it's based on an original book called 100 Baggers. And he looked into them, and they tell you how many he's been.
Like I say, how many 100 baggers has he personally...
No, he hasn't. He's studying them.
He hasn't had a single one. Of course he hasn't. Because it's easy to say that stuff.
It's easy to write a book, isn't it?
Hindsight is everything. Hindsight is 20/20. Actually spotting a 100 bagger years and years in advance in order to actually get that 25-year growth is close to impossible.
No, but the point out...
Unless you're the CEO of the company, you don't know enough about it. In fact, even the CEO doesn't know what's going to happen in 5 years' time, let alone 25. Absolutely ridiculous.
Listen,
how angry I am, because this is just nonsense.
Do you know why? Because it's challenging your entire thought process on trading investing.
It's nonsense. You can't spot these things in advance, which is why the guy who wrote the book doesn't have a 100 bagger to his name.
Glenn,
whereas I wrote the crypto trader because I had actual crypto profits that had actually
to tell me,
happened.
I had actually said where you have never had a 100 bagger in crypto either. Never.
Yeah, I have actually.
Who? Go on then. Yeah, I have actually. Go on then. Tell me one.
Yeah, I have actually.
Tell me one where you've not looked at the chart and you've held on, because there's no way any crypto has gone up 100 times and not had volatility.
Coty. There you go. I've had a 100 bagger in that.
What's the ticker on that? And when did you buy it? And
We talked about it on the podcast. We first talked about it on the podcast, I think, about 3 years ago. Two years ago. We weren't talking three years ago, were we?
COTI.
Very early on, near the beginning of our podcast days, me and you, we talked about COTI. I was very keen on it back then.
And what period did you hold it at? From what period?
I've held it from... the moment that the price chart begins, not the moment, but near it.
Okay, so it dropped from 0.09 down to 0.003. So it literally decimated.
Where was it?
You wouldn't have held on there, Glenn.
Hold on. COTI on... Where is it? On... I'm trying to find it on KuCoin, which is where it used to be mainly listed. So its price activity goes back to the middle of 2019.
Yeah. And where was the 100 bagger there?
And let's see.
There's a lot of volatility on that chart.
Are you trying to find the bottom?
You're trying to find the bottom and the highest point.
The bottom was really low and the top was really high.
Yeah, and I did both. Yeah.
Let's look.
Do you know what? This coin should be...
I'm still holding it. And you can see that the price has fallen quite considerably,
it's
right?
It's never done a 100 bagger.
Can you see? Yes, it has. What are you
it's
talking
not,
about?
It's not. Never done it.
It has. Why don't you look at the price and see that
So are you saying you ignored all the charting signals that you normally look at, and you kept holding on
no,
to it.
No, because I was following a long-term trend following in that case, you see. So,
are you changing the goalposts as we go?
No, not at all changing the goalposts. These are the goalposts. I didn't change them. They are in position. Like
so
they
this
have
point
been
since where,
the beginning
where
of the trade. This look, point, I've got 100 bagger. The guy who wrote the book about 100 baggers hasn't got 100 bagger. So who's the winner,
no,
me or him?
No, do you not understand, Glenn? He's written a book to study 100 baggers. To help himself and others. Okay?
No, won't help himself.
He's not saying, I've had 100 bagger.
He'll never get one.
I'll have 100 baggers. How do you do it?
He doesn't know what he's doing, whereas I've got one because I know what I'm doing.
You should read the book. It's quite technical. There's a lot of information
in
there.
I'm sure it is. I probably won't understand it. Right, sounds way beyond me.
It's gone five times his money. It went from, what, 0.8?
Five times. He sounds like a genius.
No, this, I'm talking about Coty. I'm looking at the book, the Feb 2021. When did you buy this? When?
I told you, in 2019. Can you see?
Yes.
On the chart? You know, you have to look at the KuCoin chart. If you only look at the chart that's based on Binance figures, then it doesn't go back far enough because it wasn't listed in Binance on Binance until 2020.
No, it was. I'm looking on Binance. It listed in 4th of June 2019.
Let's have a look.
And it went from 0.09 all the way down.
Okay,
right?
USD. 2000. No, it doesn't. I can't find the... Are you sure you're not looking at the KuCoin chart?
COTI, is that the ticker? USD, yeah?
Oh, you're looking at the one that says calculated by trading view in brackets,
yeah?
Right, that wasn't actually... Oh,
I thought
on
not.
Binance.
Yeah,
they calculate it with hindsight. But yeah, that's the chart. That's the one you need to look at, yeah.
Swear on your everyone's loved one's life that you did 100 bagger in this. Swear on your closest nearest and dearest life you did 100 bagger. Or you just saying this to win the argument.
I did 100 bagger, but then the price it's now in a drawdown, right? So it's no longer quite 100 bagger, but it's still a many, many bagger.
I'm now starting
to
question.
Let me calculate it. What is it now? It's about 40 bagger?
No, generally, questioning your honesty here, integrity, Glenn.
Why?
Because this has been so volatile. You jump out of Bitcoin when it drops by 10%. And yet,
this long term trend following.
Why are you not long term trend following Bitcoin?
Because I didn't believe that Bitcoin had that kind of 100 bagger potential. So it's not the same kind of trade.
From the start?
Huh?
From the start, Bitcoin,
plus
the first cryptocurrency.
Liquid, so it's better to... Look, with Bitcoin, right, I followed a shorter-term trend following. So it's still a long-term trend following system, but shorter, as in...
So now
it allowed
different...
me to basically get in and out, say, every few weeks or every few months in some cases, right? Whereas with Coty, I decided right from the start this is going to be a long-term one, and only if the price starts entering a long-term downtrend would I get out of it. And as you can see from that chart, it never actually goes down for more than about a month or two at a time, which doesn't really count as a proper long-term downtrend. Plus, it never made lower lows. It was always making higher lows all the way along. You can see that the trend is just like continually upwards, 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 even though it has big drawdowns along the way. But you'd expect that with 100 bagger, it's bound to like fall, you know, it's extremely volatile. So you don't put like enormous amounts of money.
Now you've basically done away with your normal trading rules.
Not at all.
And
it's
the exact
same system, just on a longer term scale.
You're holding. That's
not buy and hold.
Glenn, hang on.
I'd be out of it.
That's the premise of the book, okay? Essentially, most people will never achieve, not even 10 bags, let alone 100 bags, because they trade too much. They buy and sell too much. When they're holding onto a company that's doing well, but, you know, they're looking at the share price, they're influenced by the share price too much and not the business underlying it, they sell. And that's the problem. Trading is the issue. That's the issue.
Absolutely not, because I'm trading here. I'm not...
You're trading, but you've held it for 2 years.
Slash investing.
You've held it for 2 years.
Yeah, traders can hold for 2 years.
No, they don't, Glenn. You're a dirty day trader.
How long do you sometimes hold things for? You think a trader is an investor.
He's an investor.
Day trader is a very specific type of trader.
You are, a dirty trader.
Who just trades like 20 times a day.
That's
not
you.
Me.
It is.
Never has been.
Well, several times a week. In and out, in and out. Share price moves, head and shoulders. Oh, I know. I'm telling.
I bought and sold Bitcoin like a handful of times in the past, 2 years. So it's like, it's not like I'm in and out day after day. It's
handful. You told me you bought and sold about 10 times.
I can't count how many. So yeah, maybe I think less than that. I think less than 10 times. Hold on, wait. Are you talking about buys and sells?
I don't know if you're telling me the truth on anything here.
The actual number of buys can't be more than about 5. I have to check. But anyway, point is, we're only talking about once every couple of months, something like that. So I was like, hardly like I'm like some crazy trader, in and out of Bitcoin.
Well, okay, now listen, I'll write down now, because I'll write down exactly what you're in. What are you in at the moment? You're obviously in Coty, because you're a long-term investor in that, not a trader. Yeah. You've never mentioned Coty for ages. How come you've never
mentioned
what are you in it
several times over the years?
But hang on, you've not mentioned that to me for a long
maybe
time.
6 months ago, probably I mentioned it. I can't remember.
And you didn't get out of it?
No, God no. Look at it. Why would I get out of it?
Because you're trading. You wear your pants
You're not getting. I just pulled off my own headphones in frustration.
You're getting angry because the truth hurts.
No, because it's annoying, because you don't understand what trading is, and it's doing my head in, right? Trading doesn't necessarily mean getting in and out of something every bloody day. It means following a system where you rely on the charts to some degree to tell you whether you're in an uptrend or a downtrend. That uptrend or a downtrend can be a short-term one, it can be a day trading one, or it can be a very long-term one, where you only buy and sell, say, once every few years. You know, that's still a trading system.
Right, what are you in at the moment? I'll get my spreadsheet out here.
I'm not going through all my stuff, but Coty, you can have that one. You can have that
See?
For free.
You won't even tell me the truth of what you hold now.
No, I don't want to, because God knows, because you're going to mess with, you're playing psychological games with me. You're going to mess my psychology. Now
Glenn's
I've told you about
holdings.
Coty, you're going to be asking me about it the whole time. Why haven't you sold it, Glenn? I thought you were a trader. I think you should sell it now. Oh, look, it's gone below that important line. Shouldn't you be selling it? You're going to mess, you know, so far I've done extremely well out of Coty, and now you're going to play mind games with me from this moment on, and I wish I'd never bloody mentioned
No, I won't, Glenn. I said, well done, you're holding it. I'm glad you are. At last, you're realising investing is the way forward.
Lord.
Do me a favour, all right?
I think we should drop the semantics of the difference between investing and trading.
No,
because, frankly, it is just semantics.
No, I don't, because, do you know what? You realise most successful investors in life hardly ever sell. They get as long as the business is improving, they just hold on, regardless of the ups and downs of the market.
That's absolutely not true, is it?
Of course it is.
No, it isn't.
Yes.
It isn't.
And that's, do you know what? That's why.
I mean, it just isn't. You know,
it's confirmation bias, isn't it? You want
to
believe it's not true.
No, because I know it's not.
Because
true.
it doesn't fit your system.
No, because I know it's not. Well, what's, you know, where are your examples of these the people who just hold on forever?
Buffett buys
actual companies as opposed to some shares, so it's not quite the same thing.
He doesn't buy companies. The most money he's ever made has been at Apple, and that's a company. He doesn't own shares in that.
Most of the stuff he buys is companies, right?
Most of the money he's ever made, 90% of his money he's made has been over the age of 50 due to long-term holds compound growth. It's proved that one of the best performers I've ever had, I've held for maybe close to 3 years now, and it keeps getting better, and it's going to keep getting better and better and better. Because why would I trade that? Go up and down, because crossover, head and shoulders.
I don't know. Which one is it?
Plair and Imaging. POLX.
POLX.
Yeah, yeah. It's basically they have technology, right?
Yeah.
That MRI and CT scans cannot pick up. There's long COVID issues now. Oxford University just done a study with their technology. FDA approval on the 8th of October. You can imagine, lung conditions are a massive market worldwide. Their polarizers will be in every hospital, in addition to MRIs, because it's an additional to MRI and CT
right.
scans.
Okay, so this is what I would do in my trading or investing, whatever you want to call it. I would do the fundamental research. I would find out the stuff that you just said.
Why are you doing that? If you're a trader?
Because that matters.
You're a trader.
No. You see, that's the thing.
Well, you're not a trader, are you?
Where did you get the idea that traders don't look at fundamentals?
Traders are lazy, dirty animals who just trade the price.
They trade
the price.
You've been in this business all this time and you don't even know what
they trade the price. There's technical analysis,
just
which is top.
Trade the price. They look at fundamentals.
No, they don't.
Some of them look at fundamentals.
They don't.
And some of them don't look at fundamentals.
There's fundamental analysis.
I've told you 1,000 times.
Glenn,
I look at fundamentals for shares.
Yeah, there's fundamental analysis.
But I would also look at the chart, and I would say the chart of Polarian Imaging is very bullish and has been very bullish pretty much all the way along. It's never started making lower highs. It's been, even when it's had bad downturns in the early 2020, it still didn't break its lows. You know, which was a very good sign even back
then. I see what you're saying. So you're saying you're not a 100% trader because there's technical analysis. Can I finish here? There's technical analysts and fundamental analysts, right? Now, there are some people that do a bit of both. I look at charts as well. I'm mainly sort of 80%, say, fundamental, 90% probably fundamentals, 10% charts. But traders generally don't look at the fundamentals of companies. No point. You can't look at fundamentals of crypto pretty much, can you? Really? There's not a lot there.
A lot of traders look at the fundamentals, as you well know. I mean, look, crypto traders spend their whole bloody time on YouTube looking at videos about, you know, what Ethereum's not just the charts, but also looking at the narratives and looking at the story for the years ahead. You know, most traders and investors, look at fundamentals. It's probably a minority, a small minority, who only look at charts or only look at fundamentals.
Most people just do both, including me and you.
Why are we even arguing about it? It's like you're starting an argument for no good reason here.
What's a good reason, that is? Most content creators, of course they'll look at the fundamentals, yes, because they have to create content. But the herd generally just follow the content creators, and it's going to the moon! Yay! Now, I've got you down for Coty. When did you hold this out? You've held this today. How long have you held it for?
A couple of years, like I said.
Okay. Any specific date?
I have to dig out my trading records. I don't have it in a portfolio.
What else do you hold?
I'd have to log into the wallet to find out when I did it. Huh?
Just Coty you hold at the moment, or anything else?
I'm not at liberty to discuss anything else. But that's my biggest holding.
You hold one crypto, Coty. That's it.
I'm not going to talk about the others because, like I said, you're already messing with my psychology on this one. I don't want to open myself to any further ridicule. I don't want to be transparent. Why would I want to be transparent? Well, I want to be transparent so that you can pick your way through my belongings, as it were.
Okay.
And go, I don't like that. I'm not sure about that. I like that. You should throw that out, mate.
You should stand up for that, though, you think. It's fine.
But I'm a human being, you know. I can be swayed by other people to some degree, and I want to try and avoid that if it's all possible.
Can't you defend your positions? You should do if you invested in them, surely.
Yeah, I defend them against you know, all kinds of things, articles I read and so on. But the last thing I need is you worming into my brain as well.
Okay. So you don't. So you don't hold Bitcoin at the moment, do you?
No. And I may not buy it. I haven't decided yet, but I'm already quite exposed crypto-wise. And frankly, whenever Bitcoin goes up, Coty and the others that I hold all tend to kind of follow anyway.
Hang on, give us a couple of examples of some others.
There's a hell of a lot of correlation between Bitcoin and nearly every other cryptocurrency.
No, I know.
So you know.
So how many do you hold at the moment? Just a rough ballpark. How many do you hold?
A few. Not many.
What, less than five?
Yeah.
Okay, well, Coty's one. Give me another few.
No!
I'm not going to look into them.
Can you just not take no for an answer? This is like turning into one of those Me Too situations, isn't it? Where, you know, I'm saying no and you're trying to still persuade me and I'm like, oh, no.
So if I look on KuCoin, is that where I should...
It's the power dynamic,
Is that where I should look, KuCoin?
You're the Harvey Weinstein in this situation.
You wish. Listen, so if I look at KuCoin, is that what I'm looking for, Coty? Is that what I'm looking at or not? Is that what I'm looking at? Is that where I should look?
Well... Now it's tradable on Binance as well these days, but yeah, so you could look at that trade, you know, calculated by TradingView chart on Binance if you want the one that goes back to 2019.
Okay, so price.
KuCoin is not an exchange I like to use these days. It had a hack not so long ago. Not a good exchange as far as I'm concerned because of that hack. I mean, I'm sure they've smartened up their their systems and tightened up their ways. I say massively backtracking. I'm sure they're great now, but I don't like the fact that they suffered a hack.
In all seriousness, right? I probably want to hold a maximum of 5 cryptos, right? Maximum. So fundamentally, I'm looking at cryptos now that you think have longevity. Do you think Coty has longevity or is it just a trade?
Well, here's the thing, you see. Coty, I think, has amazing technology. I learned a hell of a lot about it.
What does it do? What is it?
It's a new type of payment system that is far more advanced than Bitcoin. It basically does the same kind of thing as Bitcoin, but in a much better way. It just has better technology, which I could go into in some detail,
but
it's very technical. It's a very technical thing. You know, I really understood this. I got to know the maths of it. You know, the maths is important. If you look at the white paper, it's you know, I became a proper kind of geeky techie in order to understand this this crypto. And I was very impressed with the technology. But the reason why I would still pay attention to the charts and make sure that it doesn't fall into a long-term downtrend is because, to some extent, of course, it's still a punt. It's a relatively small company. I'm like a dragon in the dragon's den. I'm investing in something or trading something that I think is, I guess, investing in something that I think has great potential. But I also have my eyes open and I'm very aware that it just might never take off for one reason or another. You know, the marketing might not be right or whatever. And for one reason or another, it just never captures the public imagination. That could happen, which is why you have to watch the chart Coty's and make one. Sure it doesn't enter a long-term decline.
Coty's one. Just name another one you think will have longevity here.
Cardano, I guess.
Cardano, yes, that's quite big, though, isn't it? I'm looking smaller. What's smaller size?
Smaller ones. There are quite a few.
Okay.
Decentraland is one that is often talked about and that I find quite exciting. It's like one of these virtual universes, and it's all managed using Mana, which is a cryptocurrency. So Mana, M-A-N-A, is the code you're looking for there.
Okay.
Decentraland has huge long-term potential, but again, it's one of those things where it could take off and be the next Roblox or the next Minecraft type thing, in the sense that it will be an open world where millions and millions of people interact with each other, or it just might not. You know, it just might never become a big thing.
Yeah, okay, so that's my cap is 790 million. Okay, so do you hold that?
Not at the moment, no.
Okay. All right, well, you're not going to tell me what you hold, are you?
No, but I might buy back into it if I don't know. I'm not 100% convinced. I like the technology, but as I say, I've yet to see such a buzz about it in the way that there was a buzz early on about, say, Minecraft or Roblox or something like that. You know, I don't see the kids, like, jumping into it at the moment. That worries me.
No, I don't see that as a long term. Okay, so, all right, so let's finish off on our weekly price predictions for Bitcoin.
Yeah, well, the ones I never do, those ones. Yeah.
Okay.
God, we've gone so far over on time.
Yeah, luckily.
It's because, you know, you caught me and you reeled me in and you were like, I'm not going to let this fishy go. I'm going to keep, as long as the fishy struggles, I'm going to keep reeling.
I got my spreadsheet here, right? Every time you mention a new hold, I'm going to add it to the list, okay? Because you're not forthcoming with what you hold.
Not right now.
I'd like you to just say, what is it?
Huh?
Just tell me what it is, you know?
What?
What are you holding?
I've told you, like, my biggest holding. Just be happy with that. It's a victory for you. You've done well here today.
Oh, okay, brilliant.
You're a winner.
I don't see that. I don't feel like I'm a winner. I've got one crypto you mentioned.
Yeah, well, it's a good one.
It's a huge success, though.
It's okay. Only 100 bagger. Well, it was 100 bagger.
No, I mean for me, not for you. I don't feel like I've got success.
Maybe it could be 100 bag again. I mean, what's the current market cap of Coty? It's still relatively low.
How much did you have in it then?
Let's have a look.
How much did you put in it when you've got 100 bags?
A significant amount, but I'm not going to go into the exact amount.
Well, if you have 100 bags, you put a significant amount in it and you had 100 bags.
I have a significant amount now, put it that way.
Okay, you didn't sell any then. So why not?
No, I did not. Because I was a good little Buffett.
So did you
and
sell,
I held.
Did did you say you put? Well, no, but I know. But let's say you put. I know. Let's say you put ten grand. Let's have a grand for round figures. Easy.
So here we go. Market cap 146 million only still. So yeah. It's got a long way to go.
So it went up to £100,000, right? Let's say you put a grand in, right? And yet you didn't take any money off, and even it's dropped now to about £40,000. Now, that's only £1,000 you put in. So
I did, you know what? I did seriously consider taking a chunk of profit.
So I'm assuming you put more than £1,000 in.
But I decided against it.
No, so I'm assuming you put more than £1,000 in.
I'm not going to mention numbers, but you know, so suffice it to say, I never invest in anything with just hundreds of pounds. It doesn't happen. Because I'm a big roller.
No, of course not. I mean, I never consider myself investing anything. I mean, no, I'm saying a minimum because it's easy to do the maths. £1,000 times 100, and 1,000. So you lost 60 grand in the pullback, and you didn't sell any as a trader.
Yeah.
So you can times it by 10.
Aren't the numbers. You've just made those numbers up. No, but even so, I take your point.
You
say
it's come back by, you said, it's a
4%. Yeah, I take your point. Absolutely.
So but, if it's 10 grand in, you know, that literally, it's a million quid it's gone to, and yet it's come down to what, I don't know, half a million now? You lost half a million in paper loss, and you're still happy to hold?
Whatevs. Point is, I'm still happy to hold as long as it's on a long-term uptrend, because this is a long-term trend following success. Let's have a look at, like, the 200-day moving average, for example. And see, recording. Are we actually still recording all of this? I feel we're just having a nice little chat, me and you. Yeah.
But it's gone below a couple of times. It went below in 2020, in October.
It went below what?
The 200-day moving average.
Yeah, probably did.
So what's the long-term trend there? Because, you know, there's no longer-term trend, surely, than the 200-day moving average. And it's gone below that.
Still was. That's
Glenda.
Why you use moving average crossover system. That's why you don't just use a moving average. You use moving average crossover system so that you don't get in and out and in and out.
So you should be out by now then, because the 20 days crossed 200 day, and the 50 days crossed the 20 day as well. So
has the 200 day crossed the 300 day?
Oh, 300 day, Glenn.
I use 300 day for next.
Yeah.
300 day, mate.
Okay, yeah. Right.
I hardly ever use the 300-day, but I do use it sometimes.
I think we'll park your flexible trading system right here, and we'll say...
1,000-day?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I use a 5,000-day. If it doesn't go below that, I'm still in.
You know, in some ways, I know that sounds stupid, but in some ways, that kind of makes sense. Because my only point about your investing strategy, my only criticism of it, and it's only one criticism, is that if something enters a long-term downtrend, like it's actually just going to go down for years and years and years, then you want to know about it. And you can actually find that out. Something stupid like a 1,000-day moving average actually signal that to you.
Glenda, I would find that out from the business itself. It would never go down for 3 years if the business was improving.
No, not necessarily.
Yes, it would.
No, it wouldn't, because it depends what the overall market's doing. If the market is in a bear market for several years, the overall market, you could still have a company that had really wonderful fundamentals and was saying, we're going to do so well in the future, and its price could still fall for years.
I think what we should say here, there's different methods.
You know, like after 1929, prices fell for 27, didn't get back to where they were for 27 years, but obviously there were good companies
in what?
There.
What are you saying? What are you going back to now? I thought the party 10 years ago was in the past. Were you going in 1929 now, the biggest crash in history.
Wall Street crash. Yeah, but the point is, because it took 27 years for share prices to come back to where they were, there were lots of good companies there in the meantime, which had fantastic potential, and yet their share prices still fell for years and years and years. So,
There's been nothing like the Wall Street crash ever, and now central banks are more accommodative. It'll never be like that ever again. So, right, so a point of reference here, we're leaving it on the 1929 Wall Street crash, are we?
What do you mean the central banks went crazy? They absolutely poured money in. Central banks did like QE like insanity in the 30s and 40s.
No, yeah, straight after, no, it took me years. The only thing that got back on the feet was World War II.
Money went up like
they weren't as fast acting as they should have been, and they would look back on it now and say we shouldn't have done that. And the thing that got the economy back on its feet again and stopped the volatility was World War II.
What's your point? No, I'm saying the 1940s.
Oh, anyway, we'll go back to that.
We're not about
1929
again.
We're
talking about how the 1940s, that's when money supply
people
went
up. So do you mean you're listening to this? And then one of us are not even listening probably. But, okay, let's park it there, Dan. I think what we're saying is, it's different strategies for investing. You've done quite well. You know, I've done very well.
Shut up.
No, only joking. So you've done well. And you've got a book out called The Dirty Trader. It's worth looking up. Sorry, The Crypto Trader. It's worth checking out. And until next week, then, speak you next to Wiki.
All right. Oh, yeah, bye then.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Net Scientific, up 7.2% to 126.5. At four, Jubilee Metals Group, up 4.9% to 1935. At three, Sarium Holdings, up 7% to 6.1. At two, Westminster Group. It's up 42% to 5.85 pence. And at one, Pilatro. It's down 19% to 42.5. Okay, it's time for the top five most read RNSs. They are at five. Westminster Group, minimum 20-year, five airport security contract in Africa. And that's why it's risen so quickly today. At four, Boohoo, trading update. At three, Avacta Group, issue of equity, total voting shares. At two, Erosion Mining, Ross Geo, JV update. And at one, Omega Diagnostics, statement, media comment. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Much appreciated.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loan subject to approval in available locations.